Well, back in session, just real quickly, the thing that we left when we adjourned at lunch was whether or not we would take a vote on whether or not that the JAC would sponsor one of the two options for transferring DFS over into the Department of Health. So I would entertain a motion now to take the option where we do it immediately and not do the study. Which one is that? 354. It's been so moved.
Second.
Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, we can take a roll call vote.
Mr. Chairman, the vote is on 18 LSO 0354, working draft 0.4. Representative Burkhart.
Aye.
Representative Larson.
Aye.
Representative Schwartz.
Aye.
Representative Summers.
Aye.
Representative Walters.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Senator Dockstetter.
Aye.
Senator Driscoll.
Excuse.
Senator Hastert.
Aye.
Senator Landon.
Aye.
Co-Chairman Burns.
No.
Chairman Nicholas.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, the motion passes. A Senate file or House bill?
I believe it'll be a House bill. And we'll probably have another opportunity to work that bill a little bit if anyone wants to, and we'll have, and if so necessary, we'll bring that back to the attention of the JAC. So, all right. With
Mr.
that,
Chairman.
Let's move back into our schedule.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Maybe the rest of my staff understand fully, but if I might ask a question, are you voting on sponsorship of that bill, but you do want to potentially reconsider it at a future meeting here?
We may work the bill.
Okay.
In other words, we'll allow the both houses of the side to review it, re-review it, make sure the wording's the way we want it.
Mr. Chairman, now I'm confused, I think Tamara's question is, the bill should be numbered now and then and then put up for introduction.
Yeah, that's correct. But if we need to play with it, we'll let you know. I don't think we will.
That's fine, Mr. Point. Chairman.
Yeah.
Yep.
Tinker. Okay, any further questions? Any other, Don, any other details or?
No, Mr. Chairman, it's also my understanding that 18 LSO 0401 will be canceled by the sponsor.
That's correct.
Yes.
That's the yes. The yeah.
Thank
you. Boom, like that, we got rid of two more.
Yes. Thank you.
In a sense. So with that, I think next up is fire protection, is that right? And electric? Agency 041. Director Reed, come on up. Have a seat. Make yourself comfy. Good afternoon. Welcome. Yeah, just one second before we go. We voted on that. Do you want her to put a vote in on the?
Yeah, hey,
thank you. Okay, Don.
Do you know which one you wanted to vote on?
I'm a no. All right. Please proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mike Reed. I'm the director of the Department of Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety, also the Wyoming State Fire Marshal. With me today, I have Deputy Director Mark Young, the Chief Master Electrician John Voster, and then we were bold enough to bring our entire finance department. Justine Morris.
This is Sean.
The
friggin' part of your finances.
she complained about that. The Division of Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety has been part of Wyoming since 1955. We're responsible for various safety issues around the state, and more specifically, six primary functions. We conduct fire and life safety and electrical inspections. We train firefighters across the state of Wyoming, provide fire and safety education programs to children, their families, and the general public. We collect and analyze fire data to help identify fire problems, conduct non-structural plan reviews for compliance with fire and life safety and electrical codes on public buildings, license and all electricians working in the state, and issue permits for work being conducted across the state. Our budget this year reflects our effort to participate in the reduction of costs and to the state budget. And with that in mind, we have included no exception requests for consideration and have taken several other steps, which although not reflected necessarily in our budget, will be reflected in other department budgets and cause a reduction in the request to the general budget. With that in mind, I would stand for any questions or proceed how you would like into questions on the budget.
Thank you. Any introductory questions? If not, seeing none, the director, please just kind of walk us through your budget.
Yes, sir. Starting into, our budget presentation for you, it starts on, starting on what would be page four. I would just bring in the basic facts of the fire prevention and electrical safety. We're made up of 33 personnel in four divisions: administration, fire prevention, electrical safety, and training. The main office is located in Cheyenne with field offices in Riverton, Douglas, Green River, Sheridan, Worland, and Laramie. We recently had an office in Afton, and but yet, in our efforts, we chose to close that office and reduce that position, expanding the requirements on our Green River office to oversee that area. Thank you, sir. I have to proceed cautiously into that subject. The total operating budget for the department for fiscal year 17-18 is $7,817,459. Of this amount, $6,597,615 is out of general funds, and $1,219,844 are other funds, and those are made up of the electrical licensing fees and permits. The different divisions we can walk through individually. You can see on the page the administrative budget and the others. And moving on to, I think probably moving on to page, considerably into it, page 10, I can go through the administrative budget and give you some descriptions of each division as we go through their individual budget. The administrative division is responsible for the general management and administration of the department. Through the management of the resources that are allocated, the administration division coordinates the activities of other divisions in the organization to provide fire prevention, electrical safety, public fire education, and fire service training programs for our customers. We also have the Council on Fire Prevention, Electrical Safety, which is a 5-member council appointed by the governor. This council promulgates rules and regulations concerning minimum fire standards. They hear appeals to determine the suitability of alternate material and types of construction, as well as interpret and grant variances from rules and regulations of the council. The total standard budget for this division this year is $974,994, all of that coming from the general fund.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, thank you, Mr. Reed. So, is this the department that reviews all of the, like, new construction and fire plans and?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, that's one of our that is one of our responsibilities.
So, when they do those inspections, and they're appears to be a discrepancy in interpretation of rule. How is that dealt with? How does one, if one disagrees with the decision of the fire marshal's office, how do you work through that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it would depend on, I always hate this answer, but it depends. It depends on the severity of the situation. It depends on the severity of the life safety issue that is affected by that situation. But after discussing the issue with whoever the inspector would be, they have an option of then going to the deputy director and having a discussion with him. That would be the aggrieved person. If that can't be determined, then a variance can be asked for of my office. And if all of those things fail, then they can go in front of, depending on what it is, the electrical board or the fire council. And then they can present their case to them and look for a variance in that area.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. So if that was another state agency, the procedure would still be the same?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, I would assume so.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, the total standard budget for the administrative office being $974,994, all of that coming from the general fund, and that division does not produce any funding. There is no exception request for this unit. Any other questions on the administrative division? Okay. The next section would be the fire prevention administration or the fire prevention unit.
Page.
Whoops. The fire prevention division principal responsibility is public safety. The division is responsible for the review of all building construction plans, conducts fire and life safety inspections to verify all safety systems are being properly installed and maintained. And this is to ensure public buildings adhere to all applicable minimum requirements of the adopted codes designed to protect life and property from fire. The total standard budget there, again, is $1,912,761, all general fund monies. And, again, there are no exception requests for this division. And if there are no questions, I proceed to the Electrical Safety Division. The Electrical Division's responsibilities are designed to ensure public safety through prevention of fires caused by improper electrical installations. The division performs electrical plan reviews, licensing of electrical contractors.
1 second.
Yes, sir.
Representative Song.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. You know, we do like the reductions, but I don't know that as you've gone through, you've mentioned your 320s.
320s.
The 292 reduction that we did across.
As you go through your sections, you haven't really touched on those, even though we really like those, right?
Yeah, but we. Yes, sir. What page do we have those on, Justine?
They're on.
Oh, right here.
7 for 101. Page 11.
Okay.
Because the total was the 53,000 altogether, and then each division had a breakdown.
And this is the off of the software.
Right.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I could, Representative. Going back into the administration, the external maintenance or the explanation of reduction on the 320 fund, we reduced the $38,398. And what you'll find is later in my presentation, there's a sheet that shows each department or each unit's reduction. All of those are resulting from, and I'll go back to Justine here in a moment if I'm wrong, but all of those reductions are the result of a change in a contractual agreement that we had on some software from the budget year. We canceled one project of software, and it's in a licensing software, which resulted in a savings even after we started the contractual agreement with the new company. And so, and that was one of the reasons that we moved into the new contract, was to have this savings occurrence to us and actually to receive a greater quality of product. And so we were fortunate to be able to do both. And so we've divided those savings up as their usage would have been appropriate in the different units. For the administration division, the savings on that agreement was $38,398.
So just a quick check on that, Sue.
Yes, sir.
That's not a one-time thing, right? That would be an ongoing savings that you will have for this two-year period based upon your previous. So that it's not a one-timer.
That's Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is correct. There will be a continuing savings on this contract that over the years will literally be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars that we will experience because of the change in this one contract. Thank you. Any other questions? And what I can do is go back to the fire administration and the reflecting the amount of money, Mr. Chairman, Representative, in the fire prevention section, we considered that as a savings of $6,494 in the external maintenance agreement for that section of our budget.
And so while we're on that issue, I'm looking at page 23. And you have a decline in revenues there. You see that? Of 50,000. Between 17, 18, and
19, 20. Justine?
Mr. Chairman, that is in regards to, we had $363,707 be 11 in 17, 18 budget. For the database, and we're no longer going to use that database, so we went to this other one, and so we did not roll forward that into the standard budget.
Okay,
so that it was a B11 that we did, and we're not rolling it forward.
Well, I was hoping it was because you had a decline in fees, and then my question was, how much do you charge, and should we raise your fees for inspection fees?
Mr. Chairman, we would love to have that discussion at some time.
Well, tell us what you feel free. We're here.
Yeah, I don't know that we're prepared to do that, but my understanding, I've been in the position for about a year and a half now, and my understanding is that there hasn't been a substantial increase to the fees for a number of years, and that will be something that we would appreciate being able to come to you with.
So what I would suggest, if you can do it on short order, is if you could present it to us sometime by the middle of next week, just in a one- or two-page synopsis, and with a recommended reasonable increase,
yes, sir.
We will consider it during markup. And if we really need to talk to you, we'll run you down here real quick, because that's kind of one of the things that we're doing is right now, as you know, we're very short of revenues. And
yes,
anything
sir.
We can do to drop your budget by an increase of fees, we will be more than welcome to do it. If those fees just go to the general fund, then that's one thing. But just if you want to shoot us an explanation of what the issues are, and if we determine that we got to look at it real quick, we will do it. So
We'll start having meetings immediately and get back with you before the middle of next week.
Wonderful.
Thank
Appreciate
you, sir.
It. Please proceed.
Excuse me for one moment.
Well, I just wanted to maybe mention that we've already
Mr. Chairman, if I could, the master electrician reminded me that we have had meetings on this, and we've made a comparison study with other states in, that surround us, and we are literally at the bottom of the list for charging for a number of our different functions, and so it would be reasonable, I think, for us to.
And so, I don't know if the fees are set by rule and reg or if they're set in statute.
Yes, sir.
But if they're either way, if you could alert us to what it is and what you think, and whatever you send to us, send us a listing of what the surrounding states are, so we can have a comparison, and any recommendations that you make with a short explanation of why, and then if we need more, we'll let you know.
Yes, sir. And we'll make that happen. Forward.
All right.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. And continuing on, Mr. Chairman, I think I just finished the electrical fees. Where am I at? Okay. Thank you. And then moving on to the electrical fees.
You are in the not-so-temporary temporary capital.
Kind of, sort of, but not really.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. The electrical department, let me get regathered here real quickly. Our electrical safety, I think I mentioned that the electrical division has ensured public safety through the prevention of fires caused by improper electrical installations. The division performs electrical plan reviews, licensing of electrical contractors, master and journeyman electricians, as well as inspectors of electrical installations to determine the safety of the public and ensure compliance with the National Electrical Code. The division provides monetary support for the 5 members of the electrical board appointed by the governor for the 6-year term. Our standard budget for this unit is $1,513,265. And that money comes from the general fund. And again, there are no exception requests for this division. And we do have the reduction in the budget by $4,000 on based again on that maintenance agreement change that that we've contracted for. Then we have the 300 division, Unit 305. This division is self-funded from the collection of electrical licenses, registration fees, and permit fees. These monies support 3 full-time employees, rent and daily operating expenses for the 3 officers statewide as mandated in state statute. The division's responsibilities are designed to ensure public safety through the prevention of fires caused by improper electrical installations. The division performs inspections of electrical installations to determine the safety of the public and ensure the compliance with the National Electrical Code. The total special revenue standard request for that department is $849,138, all of which comes from the enterprise fund.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking at the fees, and electrical inspection fees are very insignificant. What inspections are those that are so limited?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, again, it depends on the project, but we have individuals who go out, the master electricians, who go to the sites and assist in ensuring the installations are correct and up to the national codes. They put in a lot of miles traveling around the state. It's we do not do that for residential buildings, but we do for commercial and public buildings.
So, I mean, just if you're only getting $183, that tells me that you're probably not, back to this fee issue, that you're clearly not even getting your mileage out of it. Yeah. Am I mistaken?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think that's a safe bet.
Thank you.
Representative Larson.
Two
two questions, Mr. Chairman, if I may. The first one would be, is that 183 for the inspection of the whole project or per visit?
Mr. Chairman, that would be for the entire project.
And then follow up on that is, do you have a, when a request is made for inspection, how soon do you respond to that? Is there a requirement? Or help me understand, and you feel like you're staffed enough that we can respond quickly enough that we're not holding projects up?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would say that the people in the field are doing an excellent job. We're working to supply them with additional resources, such as electronic plan review, electronic inspection modules, and many other things. Those things are all in the works now. I don't believe that we've held any projects up. I would refer to Master Electrician Vostert and ask his opinion if that'd be all right.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative, we do have a statutory.
One second, we got to put you on the mic because we're on the airwaves.
I can't get you there.
We do have a statutory limit of 5 days to answer a requested inspection. And as a general rule, that has not been an issue. We do make sure to meet that requirement. And frankly, in most cases, where it's not even an issue.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative, if I could add one caveat to the conversation, that when we do the inspections initially upon new construction, but an interesting thought was shared with me the other day, and that is that once we have a building, and once we have done the plan review for that building, for the electrical or for the life safety, that we then, as a division, and I'll use the term own, but we are responsible for that building for the continuing inspections for the foreseeable future. And so it's an accumulative issue for the division. And so as Wyoming becomes more and more populous, and the number of buildings that we're responsible for or for inspecting also increases. Mr. Chairman, I'll continue. The next division is our training division. The training division's primary responsibility is to ensure public safety by providing emergency responders with safe, innovative, quality training and education opportunities. The division also maintains individual fire service training records, coordinates the Wyoming Firefighter Certification Program, collects and evaluates Wyoming's fire incident statistics, and conducts fire and arson investigations. At this time, this division does not generate any revenue funds, and we do not have any exception requests for this. And then the percentage of the reduction on the external maintenance agreement, $2,024. If there are any questions.
No, I don't believe so.
And I would, on the training division, we kind of fly by the fire, the arson investigations section of that. The officers or the fire investigators actually travel, of course, the entire state of Wyoming. And we're called upon when there are tragic fires, especially the ones that are involving a fatality. And so we're in the process, again, of trying to get them the best equipment that we can get them, the best training that we can get them, so that when they respond, we are sending the best that the state has to offer. And we're doing that, of course, while trying to reduce the budget. And we've been successful at that. I'm very proud of the work that everyone is doing in the department on that area. And then the next unit is the Fire Academy unit. And the Fire Academy's primary responsibility is to ensure that Wyoming firefighters are properly trained. Through the Fire Academy, firefighters are given quality training and educational opportunities. And in turn, this helps to assure public safety and reduce the loss of life and property. And in the entire budget for the Fire Academy at this time $477,827, all from the general fund. Again, we have no exception request for this division, and but we do have the $3,000 from the external maintenance agreement reduction.
Thank you, Director Reed. So in the academies in Riverton?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And so do we, is there, as county or other entities come and use that fire training facility, are there any fees charged to them for the use of that training?
Mr. Chairman, Justine, would you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have classroom training where they some of the classes cost $75 because we have people, we have trainers that come in, and then there is a fee of $75.
For the use of the facility,
yes.
Mr. Chairman.
And then that goes, it's a wash because then when what we do is we, because we pay our instructors for that.
Thank you. And that's available for private entities as well.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it would be.
Yeah, it's nice. Very helpful. Thank you.
Yes, sir. One other thing that we're trying, that we're in the process of doing at the Academy is we're trying to make the training that firefighters need available through a web-based curriculum. We're trying to modify a number of things. We're upgrading the internet speed up there. We were running very slow. We're now at 10 meg, and we're trying to, as the firefighters would tell me, we're trying to become equal to the Law Enforcement Academy, which runs at 100 meg. And so there's a little competition going on. But
you did move it a little closer to Main Street, I
believe. Yes, Mr. Chairman. But we are working on that. We also are working on upgrading the training grounds and the training equipment there to make it a first-rate facility. And when you visit the Academy, which I invite all of you up for, but when you visit the Academy and you walk into the front door now, you'll see a poster that we designed, and it's a firefighting scene. And at the bottom of that, it says, "Let no firefighter return to us to tell us his training failed him." And so we all live by that, and we're working towards making that true. I believe I've covered all of the different units, and would stand for any questions. If you can note that our entire budget, I believe, is listed at the governor's recommendation is listed at $7,146,580, with a total number of employees at 33.
So. Great. Any further questions? Any further questions? All right. Well, that's these kind of agencies we like having coming through. Appreciate it, Director Reed. Thank you much.
Thank you, sir. We'll try to keep it that way.
Let's just keep chugging along. Let's just move workforce services up, and we'll continue.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon, Director Cox. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Cox, and I'm the Director of the Department of Workforce Services, having been in the position for just a little over 2 years, beginning in October of 2015. Mr. Chairman, if it suits the committee's pleasure, what I'd like to do is just make some opening comments as a bit of an overview, make a couple of points, and then turn the budget presentation over to staff to make to you if that will work for you.
You bet.
Mr. Chairman, by way of introduction, there's several of us here from Workforce Services, and I want to run down through the introductions. I think most of you know most of our folks, but you may be a little bit less aware of exactly where they fit into the agency, and also we've made some changes to that. If you look at page 9 of our budget, you'll see an organizational chart, which is a bit different than it has been in the past, and it's reflective of some internal changes that I'll talk about here in just a minute. But beginning with introductions, if I can, John Eispart, sitting next to me on my left, your right, is deputy director of the agency, and I know all of you have had extensive contact with John when he was on the workforce standards side of the agency. But since February of last year, he has served in the capacity of deputy director of the agency, and so is second in command of the agency. Toby Cates is here. Toby is administrator of workforce programs. So if you look at that org chart on page 9, you'll see the director, deputy director, and now you begin to see the major divisions of the agency represented below. There's three major divisions. Toby is administrator over workforce services, and I'll get into that just a little bit more as we go. Haley McKee is here, and she is administrator over public affairs. It's a lot more than just a PAO office. It's also our legislative liaison. Also oversees all public outreach, but in addition to that, due to internal realignment, oversees the research and planning function, or the labor management, labor market information office of the agency. Jason Wolf is here. Jason is the as we call him internally, he's the new and improved John Eisbart on the workforce standards side. He runs everything that John used to run before he was moved over. And then also in the room is Kristen Burkhart, who is our new CFO, and she has been on the job for 4 months. And a lot of what you're going to hear today in terms of the budget presentation is going to be her work and John's work, working with the rest of the staff and the programs. But in 4 months' work, I think we need to arrange counseling for her, because she's had to get used to the budget of the agency and recodify some stuff for us, just rearrange so we could present a good, sharp, clean product to you. And she's had to get used to accustomed to the agency far deeper than skin deep just in that 4 months' time.
Just so I'm clear, when you just introduced everybody, you mm-hmm. introduced Toby as head of workforce services.
I'm sorry, workforce programs.
Okay.
My apology, yep. So if you look at that org chart, you see workforce standards, public affairs, and workforce programs. Toby is workforce programs. Haley McKee, public affairs. Jason Wolf, workforce standards. one more word about Kristen Burkhart, who will be up here in my place at this table here in just a few minutes. Kristen worked for a number of years at YDOT and is one of two people that I cherry-picked from that agency during the past year to a couple of key hires. She ran the internal review section of YDOT, which oversaw the internal review of all federal programs and federal disbursements for the agency for a number of years, about 10 years in the management position there. Mr. Chairman, just the last point that I'll make about the organizational chart there, it gives you some idea of the wingspan of the agency. And I will tell you this, that in terms of what it looks like outside of Cheyenne or outside of Casper, the two major-sized offices in Cheyenne, you have the majority of workers' compensation is deployed here, but there are workers' compensation claims analysts throughout the state in small numbers. In Casper, you got the lion's share of the unemployment insurance portion of the agency and a major-sized workforce center. And then we have a physical presence or an office in 18 of the 23 counties of the state. There are 5 counties in which we do not have an office where we drive to do our services on a weekly basis. Those counties where we do not have physical presence right now or don't have an office full-time are Crook, Niobrara, Bighorn, Hot Springs, or Sublette counties do not have an office, but we deliver services from the adjacent counties. So if you live in one of those counties, for instance, Representative Somers, those services are being delivered by the Rock Springs office, which is a good-sized workforce center presence there. Just recent history in the agency, some of you will remember back in the 2011 and 12, there was a merger between two state agencies, the Department of Employment and the Department of Workforce Services, which results in the agency that you have sitting before you, being represented for you today. In 2017, then, and here's why I'm bringing all this up, the next step for us was to do an internal realignment. It doesn't require significant legislative action other than the fact that you're going to see some position moves proposed in our budget today. We're not asking for any general funds. In fact, we're going to propose to you a net return of general funds in the amount of about $176,000, which is a result of the internal position moves that we're able to make. But more importantly than that, the internal moves that we've made in the agency have resulted, and it's just summarized in this organizational chart, but it's our best effort after a year and a half plus of contemplation of how do we best deploy our people, how do we best take care of the mission, how do we stay focused on what we're supposed to be doing, and best deliver the best people, the most expertise where it's needed. And so that's the driving reason internally. Externally, the net benefit of that is a return to the general fund. I already mentioned a couple of key hires. One that I mentioned to you last year that we were going to do was, and we were able to successfully recruit and hire. And again, it's another theft from YDOT, but I stole the best strategic planning and performance improvement state employee in state government from YDOT. And I haven't received a demand for apology from Director Panos yet, but I anticipate that arriving any day. Mr. Chairman, my... ironically, Mr. Chairman, both of these employees that I was able – these are people that are well-known to me and people that I had the privilege of working with over the years as director of DOT, but they're not people that were highly visible to you. These are people that were within the ranks and had a tremendous amount of expertise. You'll be seeing and hearing more from them. Quickly, my priorities as director could be summarized as this: a mission focus throughout the agency, fiscal discipline within the agency, and I'm speaking of processes as much as I am spending, leadership development and cross-discipline collaboration, one of the things that we've been working hard on at the staff level and throughout the organization. When you merge two agencies like we did or like you all did in 2011 and 12, you bring two cultures together. That's an event, and then you have a process that goes on from there forward, and you build into that you rebuild a culture. This agency, by the way, today, please don't split them apart again, but they were together, they were apart, they were together, they were apart, now they're together again. We just, that remarriage is a successful one, we believe, and we're setting out to prove that. Mr. Chairman, organizational maturity is a big priority of mine, and what I mean by that is this: that in a limited time that directors come and go, in a limited time that a person like myself can come and try to have the best possible influence on the agency in terms of leadership, one of the you decide what those priorities are. And one of the things that I believe that every agency needs I deeply am convinced after almost 40 years in the business that government functions best when it's adaptive to change and able to change and nimble, but it's stable. We oftentimes are maligned by private business as being slow, and we are slower. There's no question about that. Part of it is a checks and balance intentional thing, I think, by the people that create government agencies. But the thing is, we should not be our own worst enemy or the enemy of business or private industry. And so the phrase that I've used over the years is that we function best in a position of forward-leaning stability, I'll give you one word example: Endow. As the Endow initiative moves forward, assuming that it gathers appropriate speed, and by the way, I've been at every single Endow meeting so far. It's been a very busy time, but as one of the state staffing agencies, I can tell you that from my perspective, and I'm no expert on any of this stuff, but from my perspective, there's good reason for optimism in this. So the state agencies need to be well-positioned and agile enough to be able to adapt to whatever the state asks of them, whatever the legislature asks of them in terms of their processes. And then the strategic performance improvement, that is identifying what priorities are, measuring what we do and why we do it within the agency. And that was one of those hires that I made that I hinted at. Mr. Chairman, very quickly, I'd like to just bring to your attention there are some things that are challenges for us. And this is not something that I would ask you to fix nor maybe what you could fix in the future. But when you work with the federal government, we're 13% state funded, general funded. And the rest of our funds are either industrial accident fund or federal funds. And largely on the workforce side of the agency and on the unemployment insurance side of the agency, that's the lion's share of that. Vocational rehabilitation, the lion's share of that is federal funding. Whenever you're working with federal funding, there's a lot of rules and a lot of laws that you have to comply with, and that is far more difficult and far less nimble than it is on the state level. So it presents the absolute imperative that you get good at what you're doing. You know, I'm talking about the agency, I'm not talking about me, but you get good at what you're doing in terms of interacting with the federal government as a partner, because they see this as their money coming to you. We see it as our money coming back to us, and how do we hand fit that into Wyoming and make that work in the best way for Wyoming rather than any sort of one size fits all. But we see challenges on OSHA, in the OSHA program. A couple years ago, we mentioned to you that we had separated off half of the OSHA, the state-run federal program of OSHA in Wyoming, separated that off into a state-run program in order to sequester them away from the federal regulations and the federal funds, set up a state-run program, and we have quadrupled the number of employer visits, the number of employer consults that we've been able to do at no cost to employers, simply on request, where we can send an expert that has the same training as an OSHA inspection officer into their businesses and help them prepare to have as safe a business as possible. And they can take advantage of premium discount programs as a result of complying with safety thresholds. On the workforce side, we see federal challenges along the line of being in lion's share funded by federal funds. The Wyoming Workforce Development Council has the oversight responsibility over the agency and over the workforce one-stop centers of complying with the federal act. This becomes a process largely of insisting that it is not a template. It isn't a cookie-cutter approach that if it fits in Houston, Texas, it should fit in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And it's a matter of an insistence on our part that we make sure that it fits for the state of Wyoming. Last federal challenge that I will mention to you here is that the YCAN project that we have spoken of before, this is a modernization of the unemployment insurance mainframe system. Actually, it's a migration from a mainframe, old school mainframe system to a point where this coming June we will go live and be the second state in the country who has its unemployment system in the cloud. Then we'll commence, already we're in progress on the other half of the unemployment. So we're doing tax now, or benefits now, we'll do tax next. And within the next couple of years, we're going to have, with 100%, we're talking of tens of millions of dollars, multiple tens of millions of dollars, and it's completely federally funded. Now, we may come to you at some point and ask you to allow us to spend other funds, not general funds, in a different manner to give us some spending authority so we can operate and maintain that system. But we're proud to be able to say that we're able to build that system completely with federal funding and not asking for a dime of general fund money along the way. Future item that you may be able to help us with, and I'll get off the challenges. In unemployment insurance, we've got about 22 employees that are temporary employees. They're temps. We have to hire them through a temp agency. With the unemployment insurance grant, there's a mandate that we fill a certain number of FTEs based on the amount of the grant as we administer the unemployment insurance system in Wyoming. And so in the previous governor's administration, not the current one, in the previous governor's administration, there was a position sweep that resulted in a number of positions being taken out of DWS, the old DWS. And what we may need to talk about at some time in the future is 100% federal funded, but we need to formalize some FTEs so that we can quit training people in a round-robin sort of fashion for other people to hire from us. The best way for us to deliver services is not with a temporary employee, that we have to train to all the standards that are required by the Fed, and we have to have those people in place. So what we're using is probably a second best by far sort of approach. We may want to come and talk to you about full-time employees, those temps being converted to full-timers.
Thank you. Director Cox, so those temporary employees, that's not an ongoing And I hear what you're saying about being able to have those positions available, but right now they're pretty well steady through, and you're telling, but I'm hearing you say that's not a static, those individuals aren't static, that there's a change of individuals and you're in a constant state of training. And if so, why is that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, for one thing, on the recruiting end, so pre-hire, you've got a problem because when you're hiring for a temporary position, whether it's at the state or some other place in private industry, you've almost got just one foot on the ground at that point, because you can't attract the best of talent all the time. You can't compete well when you're trying to attract people to apply for a temporary position. Secondly, when they're in that temporary position, there's no guarantee of continued employment, even though we know on our side of the table that we have got to have those people in place so we can administer the system. And so when that happens, these folks are actively looking for jobs. And when they can find a secure job, then they will go ahead and take that job. So what we find ourselves doing is actually training people for other
Sounds like it's a federally funded workforce services training program.
Mr. Chairman, that's one application that we don't want to see of that. Mr. Chairman, nothing in the budget today, but we may want to talk to you about that at some point in the future.
Just out of curiosity, Director, how many FTEs are you talking about? I assume some of those 22 are part-time. I thought I heard you say. What kind of FTEs would we be looking at that you would need approval for?
Mr. Chairman, I would anticipate, without an exact answer being within reach right now, I would anticipate that it would be fewer. What we're talking about is my best number is 22 temporaries that we use right now. I think it could be fewer than that, but that would have to, in order for me to give you an authoritative number, I'd have to do a little bit more in-depth assessment of that. What that exactly looks like, I don't know. I know on our call center, it's nearly half of our deployment in our unemployment insurance call center are folks that are temps. By the way, the one benefit of it is that when we – that's a great job interview. When we have a temporary person who is committed to the agency, there's been a number of times where we've actually – when we've had a vacancy elsewhere, we've actually hired that person. So it's we've seen that sort of benefit along the way. But, again, I think it 'd be fewer than that to answer your question.
Representative Burkhart, one second.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, so I guess when we get to the unemployment insurance division, we can talk about how they're being paid. I just jumped over there real quick, and you show your 900 series, about 670,000. Is that for those employees, or are they included in your overall employee count?
Mr. Chairman, when we get to that section of the budget, could we take that up at that time? Because I think we can answer that question for you. Mr. Chairman, I'm almost done here. Just several key issues that I've already mentioned, but I'm going to just make mention of here one more time. First of all, I want to say thanks to Kevin Hibbard and the budget office, Jess Ketchum in the budget office, because with the new CFO coming on board and with some fairly significant issues within our budget that we've sat down and gotten very serious about during this past year, they've given us a significant amount of help along the way. So what you'll see in the budget today, we're asking for computers and software. I mentioned to you last year that we'd have a significant ask this year, and we have one. It's not asking for a large amount of general fund dollars. Remember, the net return to the general fund will exceed the Section 320 requirements, and that's where the savings were found. But actually, we're asking to replace computers and software that are up to 8 years old. I told you that we would be on the schedule with ETS come this year. We are on the schedule. And so every request that we have for computers and software has been in close consultation with ETS and approved by them prior to us submitting it in the budget or before the budget came to you. The position moves that I mentioned to you for internal realignment, there are a number. There's 36 or 38 individual moves that have taken place, but what those are is just right alignment of the agency that I mentioned when I was describing the organizational chart. And then once again, Mr. Chairman, that net return of about 176 grand to the general fund in compliance with Section 320 requirements, and we'll describe that to you when we get to that point in the budget. Mr. Chairman, if there's no other questions for me individually, I'll step back and ask Ms. Burkhart to come to the table here and ask John Eisbart and Kristen to present the budget to you.
Further questions? All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm
John
Eisbart. I'm the Deputy Director for Workforce Services. It's my pleasure to walk the committee through our budget this afternoon.
Great.
In front of you, you'll see a green handout. That is the same as our page 8. This just has page numbers and unit numbers to help you navigate through our budget as we go through this. So should help with that.
This is it. Okay. All right, please proceed.
Yours isn't green.
Okay. Well, it's not green.
It's not green.
Oh, some are green.
I got
white.
I got the hand-me-down.
Okay. Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
I'm so important here.
We have that order reversed. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to direct your attention to page 12, which is the Office of the Director as our first unit. This unit houses leadership positions for our three main divisions in the agency, as well as several central service units. There are two exception requests in this unit, which begin on page 14, and our Chief Financial Officer will walk us through those.
Mr. Chairman, on page 14, you'll see our first exception request number one, which correlates with your number one line item on your green sheet. As Director Cox mentioned, we've had several position moves to align the organization functions more appropriately. And you will see, as he mentioned, that there'll be several position requests. We put this all in one line item on the exception request priority sheet that you have. The net effect is $0, but within each of those units, you'll see a dollar amount which will be requested for the exception request. But again, the net effect is zero. So for the Office of the Director, this unit 0101, we have a request to move out positions and benefits in the amount of a negative $15,485. And the governor has recommended approval of this exception request.
Representative Larson, question.
Thank you, Chairman Nicholas. John, if you could, as we get through there, we understand there's a lot of federal funds involved in this department. Could you just help us understand if any of those require matching funds on the state's part? Maybe you want to do that now, or just as we go through there and look at this, it's just helpful to know if any of those require a state match.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, absolutely, because there are several areas where a dollar in state funds commands many dollars in federal funds, so absolutely.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I will direct your attention now to page 15, where we have item number 13 from your green sheet. And this is a request for hardware and software replacement, which Director Cox mentioned that we have several of these as well. This one is generally funded, one of two units that will be generally funded requested for replacement of laptops and desktops and software. And the amount for that is $29,390. The governor has recommended approval of this request.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to mention that on our requests for software, that we have worked with ETS on this to reduce the Microsoft suite products as much as possible. We couldn't do that completely because several of our platforms, our UI new platform, YCAN, and our PowerSuite platform in workers' compensation are built around Microsoft products. But in all those areas where we were able to, We did switch from Microsoft Suite to the Google products. Mr. Chairman, if there are no other questions about this unit, I would like to please direct your attention to page 19, our public affairs unit. While this unit is officially called our public affairs unit, as Director Cox mentioned, in reality is much broader than this. This unit also houses our labor market information division, as well as our Workforce Innovations and Opportunities Act, commonly called WIOA, policy unit here as well. Our public affairs unit is charged with presenting information to the public on our 55-plus programs in our agency. Our labor market information unit works in cooperation with our Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics department and conducts a wide variety of labor market information. One of the most popular is the monthly unemployment statistics or employment statistics. Our WIOA team provides specific support to the Workforce Development Council as well as our Workforce Center management team. And they provide policy-level support and monitoring to ensure that we meet all the federal requirements there. There is one exception request, which is on page 21.
Mr. Chairman, on page 21, you will find our exception request number 14 on your green sheet, which is another request for hardware and software for the Public Affairs Office in the amount of $8,989. The governor has recommended approval of this, and ETS has also approved this request
so
as well.
We were just wondering if you could send out an email to the rest of the agencies that you can survive on computers that are more than 4 years old.
That.
Right, Meredith? Representative Larson.
So, John, if you would help us as I read how the general fund portion of the Public Affairs Division is funded, it appears to me that that's reimbursed. Is that back when you say through NICR, is that on the workers' comp side, or what's that NICR? And then would this $8,900 for a computer, is that accounted to the general fund portion that would be reimbursed as well?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, so the NICR, that's our indirect cost rate.
Okay.
And so much of that is in our indirect cost rate that we allocate, and then those federal funds reimburse it. So it's, in many of those cases, a 100% direct reimbursement to the state general fund.
These computers?
On the computers, I'm not sure. Ms. Burkhart, are you?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe these ones will be reimbursed. They're in our indirect cost rate, so they'll be reimbursed partially through our indirect cost rate.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions, I would like to please direct your attention to page 23. For our Workforce Development Training Fund, our Senior Community Service Employment Program, and our Head Start grant.
Please.
This unit consists of those different divisions, Workforce Development Training Fund, Senior Community Service Employment Program, and our Head Start grant. The Workforce Development Training Fund is an economic development tool designed to assist new and expanding businesses. There are three main components to this, and those are training grants, those are pre-hire grants, and those are pre-obligation grants. Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to emphasize that due to the significant cuts to this program in the past, we feel it's essential to maintain the current level of support. The training fund is an important piece of supporting current businesses and attracting new businesses to Wyoming.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And as I read the write-up here, it's you contracted with 220 businesses to train 2,802 individuals and 16 68 businesses to provide grant funding for 1,451 individuals in 2017. What's the majority type of your businesses that, that run through this program? So is there, do you have some categories by you can kind of put these into to give me a sense of what we're doing here?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, I think you'll see on that detail a variety of businesses, but I'd like to ask our administrator of that program, Ms. Haley McKee, if she knows of any trends or any of those.
Toby.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was one of the ones that changed in our reorganization, so I apologize, Ms. Cates.
Mr. Chairman, so a large majority of those businesses are healthcare and social assistance, followed closely by professional and technical services, construction, education, finance, manufacturing, retail. It's all over the map.
Thank you.
Please. And so, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And so, Toby, an example of that is we've had a real problem with CNAs throughout the state, and those healthcare facilities can apply and get grants to provide training for CNAs. Is that a fair example?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, that's correct. And I think the other area, not only do we serve the businesses through the training grants to help with their occupational needs, we're also serving individuals through WIOA, which is our Workforce Innovations and Opportunities Act, to also pay for training for them. So you're going to see trainings in the healthcare CNA RNs throughout our entire budget. So we can talk more about that later as well.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So we see an increase from 16 to 17, at least in the number of business, maybe not the number of individuals, but businesses. So if you go back 1 year, 15, you know, as we hit the bust, then have we seen an increase? So what's kind of, and you don't have to give me a ton of stuff, but is there some information before that, kind of before we started to see the big revenue decline in the state of Wyoming? So are we seeing an increase now because we need to have retraining?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, I believe that's an accurate statement. And if you would like, I can follow up and give you more detail and comparisons from before we went into the recession, right, until now, so you can see exactly what's been going on with those trends.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to see that in kind of the categories and if the categories are changing over to who's using this service, just so we have that if somebody asks. Thank
Mr. Chairman, absolutely.
Mr. Chairman, just a follow-up point for Representative Summers in that I do know that we have a lot of CNAs that enhance their skills to go from a CNA to an RN, distinct shortages in the healthcare field. Our senior community service employment program provides services to help low-income older workers develop vocational and employment skills. The Head Start grant fosters and facilitates the collaborative efforts between Head Start facilities and the various state agencies involved in early childhood education, health, and nutrition for low-income families, low-income children and their families.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, I'm wondering, on the senior community service program, I'm imagining there's logistical reasons why it's geographically confined. But I'm wondering if it's successful, do you envision an ability to expand it around the state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schwartz, we would love to, but it is very limited funding on this. They do provide services to all counties, but it is primarily located in four counties run by our agency, and then it's subcontracted out to provide services to the rest of the state. But it's very limited funding in that program. Mr. Chairman, there is, members of the committee, there is one exception request for this unit on page 26.
Mr. Chairman, on page 26, you will find our exception request number 3 on your green sheet. This is to permitize a $250,000 Head Start grant that was B11'd in the 2017-2018 biennium, the governor has recommended approval of this exception request.
So I do have a question on this, and it kind of raises an agency-wide issue as well. When you're using federal dollars for this, what I don't see, or what I'm curious to know is, do you take part of those federal dollars and put them in vacation or sick time leave that allows those accrue for that particular position so that you don't have to use general funds at the end of the day if for some reason that grant goes away, but you've got this an individual there that has accrued and developed those costs and expenses? And it seems to me that on, you know, basically statewide, my understanding is we have that issue in terms of how people cover those costs when they replace employees, and there's no system-wide mechanism to account for those, and you use vacancies or other funds to cover that gap in the way that we pay for those benefits that we offer and are required to offer to all the state employees. And for the smaller agencies, it can be a real issue. For the bigger ones, you've always got a little bit of money and leeway to play with that, but it seems to me it would make sense, particularly on federally funded positions, that's built into your model so that you don't have to, so you're always, we're always protected, that we're using state funds to cover those obligations that are basically a federally funded position, and that the agencies begin to, at least in some mechanism, address that gap for those funds, and that and to me, you could probably do it with new hires at a minimum. When you bring a new hire in, it's kind of like retirement. You take like 0.06% that goes into a little cubbyhole for retirement and for extended retirement if they close early. And it never made sense to me why that continues to occur, and we hear complaints of particularly the smaller agencies that we didn't hire anybody back because we had to pay for retirement and or for sick leave and vacation before we could fill that position. And so I'm just curious of your feedback on that, and if that's been a discussion among the agencies or your agency or how that works.
Mr. Chairman, I think
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to keep my eye on Kevin over here while I'm trying to take a shot at this, because we may need to get more information for you. But I think that the general answer on federally funded positions is the federal grants are structured from the federal side in such a way that you cannot pay for benefit accrual upon exit of the employee. So the benefit over the long haul is that you have the employee in place and the state's not paying for that, at least at some whatever percentage. But the state benefits that accrue are the responsibility of the states upon departure. And I'm not sure how to fix that. But I can be sympathetic with the fact that would hit a smaller agency really hard, because we've felt that same pinch along the way in our agency, and we wouldn't be considered necessarily one of the smaller ones.
Well, and one of the ways you could do it is you take it out of your budget. You create a sink fund so that you have the funds available, and it's never an issue. You know, with any state or federally funded position, so people don't come to us and say, "Oh, by the way, we need some money to take care of these unobligated, unpaid for obligations." So. All right. I guess I didn't jazz anybody up with that question. All right. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This actually is for Toby. I just wanted to circle back to Representative Summers' question about the training funds. And I know you were going to look up and produce something, but I went back to the 2013-2014 budget, and I believe I'm looking at the same program. It says contracted with 534 businesses to provide grant funding for 4,886 individuals in FY10 and 608 businesses to train 11,516 individuals in FY2011. So I just wanted to kind of, pending the report, obviously the number of people that you're able to train is significantly depends upon the amount of money in the training fund. So maybe in addition to individuals trained and their career paths, there might also be information about number of requests, because I suppose you have to turn a lot of people away.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson.
That's correct.
Green light means go. That's correct. And every month, so we open the training fund grant opportunity on a monthly basis, and once, and we allocate the funds out, you know, across a year, so we divide it up so we know how much we have to give every month. And that fund closes down very quickly because the requests, you know, they just come in. They're much greater than what we have available. So we can certainly, and that all happens through our computer system, so I can certainly provide you those numbers, but I can tell you that, yes, the requests are much greater than what we do put out.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I feel compelled, Mr. Chairman, to just add that the agencies don't have the authority that you suggest for them to create a so-called savings account or sinking fund for potential payouts for employees who depart employment. When you appropriate funds to the agencies, they're for a specific purpose. If they were keeping little pots of money, I think that would you would find that would not find favor in your sight.
True, but there has to be a way that when you hire someone that there's some type of an account, and it could even be kept at A&I or it could be someplace.
Mr. Chairman.
Just to cover the issue.
There's another aspect to this whole conversation that I'd like to point out, and Kristen and I worked years together at YDOT, and we squeezed every drop of blood out of the indirect cost allocation in a very hardcore fashion with FHWA. Kristen and I and company have met a dozen times over the last year to work that process with Workforce Services and actually make it more efficient and more effective as far as a combined rate and that kind of thing. So there is an expectation that we will deliver more federal dollars on an ongoing basis through indirect cost allocation through Workforce Services. If you look at the history of the contributions to the general funds from the statewide cost allocation over the last 4 years, you'll see a dramatic increase. And largely that's due to the fact that we have worked the statewide cost allocation in a fashion of making it public. It's out there on the Budget Division's website. Everybody can challenge the source, you know, the administrative costs, where it's being expended, the methodology of distribution, square foot for buildings, for example, and the target, YDOT, for example, for ETS email. So in doing that, we have dramatically shifted what once was collected in the general fund to what you're receiving now, but we're not finished by any stretch of the imagination. What we are doing currently is we're cherry picking right now. But in the end of the day, you'll see a continued growth of federal contributions to the general fund through all indirect cost allocations across the enterprise. That's a mission of the Budget Division, and with Workforce Services, they see that as well, and we're kind of like the Starship Enterprise going into warp on it.
Good. Yeah. Beam us up. Please proceed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if there are no other questions, I'd like to please direct your attention to page 31 for our White Quality Counts program. The White Quality Counts program provides scholarships and grants for training to Wyoming's child care industry. This program also promotes public awareness about the importance of quality child care and early interactions. The Department of Family Services also relies on this program to fulfill their federal requirements to have a quality rating system. This helps DFS secure their child care support funding from the federal government. There are no exception requests for this unit, and the governor recommends approval of this standard budget.
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And, you know, once again, I hope at some point all of you agencies get together and figure out how to put kind of all of the, all of the child, either the pre-K stuff under one roof, because it seems, I don't know, just seems scattered. So, and it has for a long time, and it's just something I hope you guys do internally before one of us does it or makes some recommendations at some point.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, when this was first given to the agency as a responsibility, the thought of the governor at that time was that you have that it should be separate because one monitors and one does the quality rating for the one that implements it. So some separation there was a good thing. So that. Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions on this unit, I'd like to direct your attention to page 34, which is our Serve Wyoming program. This program coordinates with community and nonprofit organizations throughout the state to recruit individuals to help provide their critical needs. There are no exception requests for this unit, and the governor recommends approval of the standard budget. Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions on this unit, I'd like to direct your attention to page 36 for our employment and training unit. Our employment and training unit houses our 20 active workforce centers located across the state. These centers provide recruitment, screening, training, career guidance services for both businesses and citizens. In addition, there are many specific programs designed to help specific populations, such as veterans, single parents, and those individuals on public assistance. There are two exception requests for this unit, which begin on page 39.
Mr. Chairman, on page 39, you'll find, again, related to our line item number one on your green sheet in relation to our position alignment specific to employment and training. And that's moving out $834,798. And that will be moved into another unit, as you'll see later on. The governor has recommended approval of this exception request.
Okay.
I'll direct, Mr. Chairman,
yeah,
I'll direct.
And just so you know, as we work through these, you can snap those off now. Just tell us what it is.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. Easy. I'll do that. Mr. Chairman, I'll now direct you to page 41. And this is a line item number six on your green sheet. This is a hardware and software replacement for employment and training in the tune of $297,320. ETS has approved this request, and the governor has recommended approval of this exception request.
So I'm curious, when we buy 293 desktop laptops, do we get like two for one when we do that?
I don't know how that works.
We use the ETS contract pricing, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions on this unit, I'd like to please direct your attention to page 47 for the State Inspector of Mines. The State Inspector of Mines provides supportive and consultative safety inspections for all mines in the state. They help ensure that the state mining statutes and general mine safety rules are followed. There's one exception request for this unit. On page 50.
Mr. Chairman, on page 50, you will see line item number 9 for software development for the mines. This is for, the $193,952 to cover the software development. ETS has approved this request, and the governor has approved recommendation.
And those are special revenues for that as well, huh?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Representative Larson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Remind me, I have it in my mind that the mine inspector's office is located in Rock Springs. Is that correct, or do we have him someplace?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, that's correct, and that is by statute. And then there are five deputy state mine inspectors located across the state. Gillette, Lander,
Jackson?
That's not Jackson. Cody? Douglas is new one, and in Rock Springs as well. The mine inspector and a deputy are in Rock Springs.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, John, what software is the Inspector of Mines developing? What's it for?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhardt, so the State Mines program uses a fairly sophisticated software to track inspections, make sure that those hazards that are found are mitigated, and it tracks the timelines with that. In addition to that, it has a fairly sophisticated component for payment online to pay for the mine exams and those components.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions, I'd like to please direct your attention to page 53, which is for the mining exams. The state mine inspector oversees the mining unit tests and certifies the competency of both surface and underground foremen, shot firers, mine examiners, and qualified person certifications. There are no exception requests for this unit.
Next.
Okay.
Never mind.
Before, I'm glad you said shot fire. Did we have any more requests from the coal industry to adjust that statute to include them in that updated shot fire stuff? I think we talked about that a year or so ago.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I am not sure of the status of that request.
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll certainly find out and follow up.
They were not included when we changed that for the other hard rock mines, and they found themselves in a predicament, Mr. Chairman, a couple of years ago in one of the mines when all of their shot, their detonation guys were over hours and they were wanting to change that statute, I think. But anyway, if you could check on that, please.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. If we look at the revenue fund here, it's growing at a nice little clip. It looks like your expenditures, you know, are 5,000 projected, your revenues in the $50,000 range, which is a fairly healthy, you know, at some point, if that continues to grow, I would assume we would look to some other use for that money, because it's just going to continue to, looks like, pile up. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, certainly something good for us to keep the eye on. I do know that the requests for several of those with the downturn in mining have reduced, and expect somewhat of an increase in that area, but certainly a good advice for us to look at. Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions on this unit, I'd like to please direct your attention to page 58 for our vocational rehabilitation program. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is one of those areas that Representative Larson mentioned that overall, in general, it's a 78% federal funding to a 22% state funding. So every 22 cents in general funds in here command 78% of federal dollars, matching dollars. Okay. This unit has two main areas of service: a vocational rehabilitation, which provides services to individuals with either physical and or mental disabilities, with the goal of having them re-enter or retain full employment. The other unit here is the telecommunications relay services, which provides statewide continuous relay service for persons who are deaf, hard of hearing, or speech impaired. They also provide equipment to qualified individuals with those impairments. There are six exception requests for this unit beginning on page 64.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this may be back to Toby, Mr. Eisbart, in that in some discussion we had some concerns from communities that being able to get those with mental illness maybe released from Title 25 proceedings or people with mental illness and communities or disabilities was struggling to have struggled historically to find employment in. Could you kind of give us an update on what we're doing to help that move forward with voc rehab?
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, I'd like Ms. Cates to speak directly to that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I'll just give you a little bit of data and then speak specifically to those with mental health issues and some of the programs that we're working on to help get them reentered into work. I'm going to give you some data on one-year time period, so July 1 of 16 through June 30 of 17. We opened 5,410 individuals with disabilities statewide. We have 1,174 in training or retraining. 339 of those individuals are employed but not yet closed, meaning we have a time period once we get them employed and then we stick with them to ensure they don't have any other needs until we close them off the case. 148 are ready for training, and 531 have closed successfully. So mental health is one of those areas where it can be the primary disability. It is also most often a secondary disability. So even if you have someone with an orthopedic or an individual that might have a learning disability or a cognitive disability, they're also going to have a mental health issue. It's the nature of the beast, and it comes with the game. Some of the things that we're doing statewide in being able to help those individuals with mental health issues is we're partnering with our mental health centers, specifically one out of the Sheridan area, who has worked to develop a model, Mr. Paul Dimple, that he's shown a very high success rate of placing folks with some of the most significant mental health issues and barriers back into employment. So we're reaching across all of our boundaries, all of our educational lines, and coming up with models that are going to help us fulfill what you're talking about. So it's an ongoing challenge, there's no doubt, but I think we're working very hard every single day to get that done.
Chairman, so Toby, when we do that, and we have these federal funds available to help do that, and then we work with our community mental health providers, are they able then to capture some of those funds for their efforts, or does that come out of their block fund?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, so how that works is the money follows the individual. Mm-hmm. So many of our mental health centers then, if they hire or provide a full-time job coach or a job developer, then what we'll do, if they're working with a specific individual, then we pay that job coach's hourly salary out of the money that's available through the federal grant, right, that's made available to that individual. So it's an indirect way, but, yes, the dollars then do spread and help cover the cost of the different providers.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, if there's no other questions, I'll direct your attention to page 64. The first exception request is for the position alignment for VR in the amount of, it's a negative amount of $2,236,000,000. A majority of that is moving several positions out of VR into a new unit for disability determination services, which we'll discuss later. The governor has recommended approval of that exception request.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I don't want to go into a long explanation, but and I'm sure you mentioned this and I just didn't hear it. You kind of mix the term federal funds and general funds, and usually as you see these columns, it says this is general funds, this is federal funds, and then the amount ends up XYZ. So I assume this is a mix of federal and general funds.
Mr. Chairman, in this specific example, one of the positions that is being moved to the Disability Determination Services Unit is generally funded. The rest are federally funded.
Okay. Thank you.
If there are no other questions, Mr. Chairman, I direct your attention to page 66, where we have exception request number 2. This relates to what I've just spoken to, but it's moving all of the expenditures for the setup of the Disability Determination Services new unit out of VR into that new unit. Those expenditures total $4,078,000. The governor has recommended approval of this exception request. If there are no other questions, I will direct your attention, Mr. Chairman, to page 67, where we have exception request number 5, and this is a request to migrate our case management system to Aware for $750,000. This has gone through ETS approval, and the governor has recommended approval of this exception request.
Please proceed.
On page 68, Mr. Chairman, you'll find our exception request number 8. This exception request is asking for $128,166 in federal spending authority, additional to what we've already got. The governor has recommended approval of this exception request. If there are no further questions, Mr. Chairman, I'll direct your attention to page 69, where you'll find exception request number 11. This is an exception request to add $71,396 for the maintenance agreement for our telecommunications relay service program. This has gone through ETS approval, and the governor recommends approval of this exception request. If there are no other questions, Mr. Chairman, I'll direct you to page 70, where we'll find our final exception request for this unit. Number 12 is a hardware and software replacement for VR for $81,496. This has gone through ETS approval, and the governor recommends approval of this exception request.
Okay, let's keep ticking.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to direct your attention to page 76 for our unemployment insurance unit. The unemployment insurance program provides temporary financial assistance for those individuals who have lost their job through no fault of their own. Funding is provided from the federal government through a payroll tax on employers. There are 2 exception requests for this unit, beginning on page 82.
Mr. Chairman, on page 82, you'll see our exception request number 1 for position alignment for the Unemployment Insurance Division for $261,877. The governor has recommended approval of this exception request. If there's no other questions, I will direct your attention to page 83, where we have exception request number 8. This is to move employment support funds in the tune of $500,000 to our VR, our vocational rehabilitation unit, so that we can utilize more federal dollars. This will be used as a match to utilize more federal dollars. The governor has recommended approval of this exception request.
I think we like this one.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions, I'd like to please direct your attention to page 88 for the Employment Security Revenue Fund. The Employment Security Revenue Fund uses revenue from penalties and interest collected from overpayments to claimants and delinquent tax payments from employers. This fund is used to compensate for the shortfall in federal funding for administrative expenses such as building maintenance, dues for associations, and banking fees. There are no exception requests for this unit and recommended for approval by the governor. Mr. Chairman, if no questions on this, I'd like to please direct your attention to page 92.
Representative Larson.
So
Thank you. So when a benefit is fraudulently received, when an overpayment is fraudulently, explain that to me. So somebody overpays their unemployment insurance.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, this is on the claimant side. This refers to payments on the claimant side where a claimant has been overpaid either fraudulently or accidentally.
And this is the penalty assessed?
Correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
Please.
Thank you. Just on page 89, you know, just taking a look at your special revenue fund, and I realize employment is kind of going down in the state, but this fund is also one that even starting in 13, 14, you know, going on to 21, 22 is building. And so explain to me how that builds, what you think the expectation is out in the future. Will that at some time tip the other direction and will have built up a nice reserve to cushion some kind of an expansion in employment, or just kind of explain what's going on here with this fund?
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, as Director Cox mentioned in his opening remarks, the YCAN, which is the modernization effort for unemployment insurance, in that program, there are not funds, or no, the federal government does not provide funds internally for the modernization. So at some point, and rather quickly with the development of technology as well as any time statutes change, that system will need to be changed. We are looking to use this fund to help with future technology, the impact of future technology, and the need to modernize that, to continue to modernize that system.
Okay, so just to follow up, Mr. Chair, you don't, I guess because you don't know that, you don't reflect that in any increase in 19, 20, 21, 22, because you can't project that. So you feel that you may have that, but you can't project that, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, that is correct. The other real significant aspect to that is that the building in Casper, what we call the Midwest building, is an aging building, and not knowing the time of the new facility in Casper, we do know that that building is going to need some significant maintenance.
There's just always a danger of building funds, and the committee here is seeing that build up over time. Oh. I would assume.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to your buildings there in Casper, and you discussed the one on Midwest, and I know that building's in poor repair. But as I look on page 88, it says you use unemployment insurance revenue fund or federal grants for major maintenance and repairs to these buildings. So are you saying you don't receive any of the state's major maintenance dollars for state buildings? And if so, I'd like to know where those major maintenance dollars that are allocated to these buildings are being spent within this agency.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walters, we do receive some state major maintenance funding. However, this building had been off the schedule of major maintenance for many, many years, and it's only been recently that we've engaged with facilities management through ANI for that. They don't have in their projections full funding for all those repairs. For instance, that building needs a new roof. We're trying to determine if that new roof can be patched and so forth until the new building's ready and stuff. And major maintenance does not have the full funding for that. So we kick in some funding for that as in addition to major maintenance.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd follow up. You discussed three buildings in Casper, and so I just use the Midwest one. The one on Midwest Street, excuse me, as one example. What about the other two? Is it the same situation that you're not using state major maintenance, or is it very similar?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walters, major maintenance, I don't know what the limits are for their when they come in and help with projects. But the two doors down from the Midwest building is another building that we own. And so there are not nearly as significant repairs needed for that building, but certainly repairs. It houses our IT division and our labor market information division. So we use this fund for those, and again, in that same spirit with major maintenance, in a cooperative venture.
Representative Larson.
Thanks. John, would you just get us the names of those buildings? I'd like to follow up with the construction department and try to get a understand how one fell off the radar like that. That doesn't seems a little on the weird side to me. So if you'd just get me those buildings, please.
Absolutely. And Representative Larson, that was, by my recollection, we discovered that roughly 4 years ago. So, yes.
Please proceed.
Okay. So page 92 for our labor standards unit. Our labor standards unit investigates and enforces all labor laws enacted by our legislature. They also operate under a cooperative agreement with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission for federal components. There are five major areas, and they include fair employment, often called workplace discrimination, wage and hour, resident labor and contractor preference, state prevailing wage, and child labor. There are no exception requests for this unit. The governor recommends.
Sorry. Thank you. Director Cox, this question I think would be to you this year I had an opportunity to go through labor standards and fill out some forms in regards to some disputes on labor things, and found that the language requesting information on those forms is really ambiguous and could be interpreted a variety of different ways. Could we just encourage you to maybe review those and in labor standards on things that result between employee and employer conflicts or anything of that nature, and just perhaps we could address some of those issues that make it a little difficult to understand what the question is.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, absolutely. We're always looking for ways to clarify things and make that process better, so certainly.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hester.
As far as labor standards, you guys also go out to the workplaces, or I guess maybe you need to be called to the workplaces here, but you also enforce the laws as far as compliance from contractors for in-state workers. Is that through this division?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hester, that's correct. That's the Wyoming Labor Preference Act. And we do. We have four individuals that visit every public works job and oversee that. So every public works job has a requirement for to use Wyoming labor. If there's not sufficient Wyoming labor, they get a certification through the Workforce Center to authorize using non-resident labor. So we do. We enforce that and have through four individuals.
Okay, please proceed. Okay. About another 5 minutes, and then we're getting close. We might be able
to knock
it
out. We're getting close. Yeah. Hey, a challenge to get done in 5 minutes. I'll be there, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, please direct your attention to page 97 for our Worker Safety and Compensation Unit. The Worker Safety and Compensation Unit has two main divisions. The workers' compensation, which provides medical and indemnity benefits to employees injured on the job. This is funded entirely through employer-paid premiums. The other main division is Wyoming safety, worker safety, and that consists of Wyoming OSHA, the compliance division, which provides workplace inspections for fatalities, complaints, and referrals. Then the other one is Wyoming OSHA consultation, along with our new workers' compensation safety and risk unit. This is that unit that was pulled out of federal OSHA consultation And as Director Cox mentioned, quadrupled the number of inspections because it's not the bureaucracy, the federal bureaucracy is no longer over that unit. So they're able to have a whole lot of flexibility and serve many more employers than that. There are six exception requests for this unit, which begin on page 103.
Mr. Chairman, on page 103, you'll find our exception request number one, which is our position alignment for worker safety and compensation for $416,421. The governor has recommended approval of this exception request. I'll direct your attention to page 104. We have exception request number four, which is an upgrade to our workers' compensation power suite system for $1.2 million. ETS has approved this, and the governor has also recommended approval of this exception request. If there's no other questions, I'll direct you to page 105, Mr. Chairman. You'll find item number seven, which is a request for $349,345 for an upgrade to our workers' compensation documentation management solution. This has gone through the ETS approval, and the governor recommends approval of this exception request. If there are no other questions, on the bottom of page 105, Mr. Chairman, you'll find item number 15. This is a request to fund two attorney general positions for workers' comp for $253,094. The governor has – this was a previously B-11 item, and we're now making it permanent within our budget. The governor has recommended approval of this exception request.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Co-Chair.
Where was the B-11 from?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I believe the B-11 for this position was from the Department of Corrections to the Attorney General's office. We just provide the funding. So the position is in the Attorney General's office, but we provide the funding for it.
Department of Corrections?
I believe that's where the position came from.
So, Mr. Chairman.
To the Attorney General's office.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah, I know what this is. Yeah.
That, I'd also like to add on this one that this is this move has been a very good success, has led to significant savings for the division. Division has six contract attorneys. One was that was decreased was $1.1 million. So you can see the savings are. In addition, these folks are invested in the agency, and we believe we get better representation on those services.
Me too.
Okay, if there's no other questions, Mr. Chairman, I'll direct you to page 106, where you'll find item number 16. This is a request for $153,113 for workers' compensation audit position. The governor has recommended approval of this exception request.
Okay, next.
All right. I will, Mr. Chairman, direct you to page 107, where you will find item number 17, which is our Section 320 general fund reduction.
Representative Somers?
Mr. Chairman, I'd just back up a section because I have been interested in kind of the auditing of the Wyoming Preference Act, and so I do see that you created some – maybe you could go through what those positions are in doing. You created a new unit. And when was that, I guess tell me when that occurred. Was that in 16?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Somers, yes, that was, well, no, I'm sorry, that was in 17. The stimulus for this came out of the Joint Labor Committee this last session, and it was a result of the bonding bill and the discovery that really focused on out-of-state employers that come into Wyoming, conduct business, that are unregistered with our unemployment insurance and our workers' compensation programs. And the danger to the funds, both unemployment and workers' compensation, is if there's an injury, for instance, if that employer should have had coverage, we cover that employee, and we cover those expenses, and then we chase that employer, which is very, very difficult. And we didn't have an active enforcement of that. So the bonding component of that certainly helps us secure some of that, some of the funding in those cases. The Joint Labor Committee really encouraged us to increase the compliance efforts for those situations. And so we have four positions in that unit, three of which we were able to reallocate within the agency, and one position, this position here, which was a time-limited position that was extended through June 30th of 2018, and that's the one we're asking for to make permanent. So that's what those positions do. They've had very good success so far. You know, anytime there's a, I'll use a storm event, it's much bigger situation than that, as they've come to find out. But anytime you have a big hail storm, Cheyenne's a great example of that. Every summer you can bet there's a hail storm, and then roofers, there's not the capacity in Cheyenne to do all those, rebuild all those roofs in a short amount of time. So employers, roofing companies come from out of state, and I don't mean to pick on the roofing agency. It's just one that's a good example for us. But they'll come in, and they'll be, you know, I'm only going to be there for a couple of months. I'll come in, take those contracts, be back across the border. And so this unit is really designed and effective for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Proceed.
Okay. I will direct your attention to page 107, Mr. Chairman, where you'll find item number 17, which is our Section 320 general fund reduction. We essentially moved a position from general funded to special revenue funded to give back those total for this particular position of $234,962 of general fund. But as you'll see on the green sheet that we handed out, the actual amount based on all of our other exception requests that we'll be returning is the $176,852, which is in excess of $5,000 and some change over what was recommended by the governor. The governor has recommended approval of this exception request.
Okay. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do have a few questions on workers' comp just coming from some of the business side that I do. First, I would just really, to the department, like to thank them for getting, for their efforts in IT to make it possible for businesses to go online and get their workers' comp certificates. That is just a huge deal for Wyoming businesses that work to get master service agreements. And then, Mr. Chairman, last year we had a bill that give Wyoming businesses or employers a kind of a rate holiday and not have to and on their worker compensation fees. I'm curious, either John, you, or got to look and see the new guy.
Mr. Wolf.
Mr. Wolf.
the new guy, so he used to work at Jason, the Wolf. One of you, if you guys could kind of share with us how that was received. And then there was a question about maybe that's something, because we're still, Wyoming businesses are still kind of in a lull trying to pull out of this recession. If that's something that we would possibly consider again, and I think you've talked to the actuaries and could maybe just report on that and then provide this committee with the results of that report.
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I'd like to make some general comments and then Mr. Wolf speak to some of the specifics on the actuarial impact of it. But when I was the administrator of workers' compensation, my charge and goal for many of those was to keep the rates low, to have it reduce that burden on Wyoming employers, as well as when out-of-state businesses are considering Wyoming, one of the things they really use in that selection model are the workers' compensation rates and UI tax rates. So our efforts to keep them low have paid off. When you do a refund, a premium credit, you're just switching which pocket. So you're moving the impact from the rates to a credit. I'll leave it said with that. So by not doing any further credits, it helps keep rates lower than they were in this year. We were able to keep rates again at flat, so a 0%. And as you can imagine, with all the discussion about health care rates, you know, private insurance plans, there's not a single one that kept rates flat. And so we're very, very proud of the fact that, you know, workers' compensation is a very large health plan. To keep that at a 0%, very admirable. Jason, would you like to add some comments on
that? Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson. To John's point, I mean, looking back over the past 7 years with the workers' compensation rates, we have only had one increase at 1%, and the rest of the time they were either decreases on the base rates or left flat. And I think that really speaks to what John was saying about, you know, kind of the case management that we have within workers' compensation and being able to keep those claims, you know, and costs down, especially when we're dealing with medical inflation as well. So I think the rate holiday itself was received very well. We had about 16.7 million dollars paid out to Wyoming employers, I think a little over 14,000 employers. So,
Mr. Chairman. So, John, you and Jason, this question is then again back to you. In the Alvarez efficiency report that we kind of went through, they looked at other areas of efficiency and looked at the workers' compensation. And one of the comments they made there I'd like to have a little explanation on is it said that there is about the state is maintaining a workers' compensation debt of $37 million, much of which is interest and fees that is believed to be uncollectible. Could you explain that to us and tell us why that's the difficulties there?
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, that number is inflated. So if you go back, you know, there's going to be some debt from 1960 that, you know, continues to accrue that interest and penalty and so forth. So the number for what we call active or current debt within the last 8 years, because there's a statute that says beyond 8 years it's really uncollectible, but it stays on the book. So I think Mr. Wolf can talk more directly about the current level of debt, but the $37 million is not – it's not collectible by any means.
And so, Mr. Chairman, my question is, why can't we correct that? Why does it have to be kept on the books? Is that something we need to fix?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, that is something that we're currently working through with the State Auditor's Office as to how that debt is written off. So eventually we will see that 30-year-old debt kind of written off the books, so it doesn't appear there. The actual amount of collectible debt is actually much lower than that, and I don't have the exact figure for you today, but
approximately,
I think probably around the $3 million range, if I'm not mistaken.
And Mr. Chairman, and this group that you just talked about that is investigating that you hire is pursuing collections on that sort of debt. Yes? No?
Not that unit, no, sir.
Thank you. And so then, Mr. Chairman, my last question goes back to OSHA, and it relates to federal OSHA, and I guess I'm speaking back because I know you guys have had some national presence on those boards, and how businesses in Wyoming, it's particularly in the extractive business, well, in all businesses, their TRIRs are just have a huge impact on their ability to enter into agreements to work for companies, and how they determine what a recordable incident is, whether it's your fault or not. It goes on your record, becomes very problematic, and we've talked about that before. Could you just share with us if there's any progress being made to correct how that's determined and in any movement there that can give us hope?
You got it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I know that there's a variety of federal rules that have come down as far as electronic reporting and stuff, which we are working on implementing in Wyoming. The commission will adopt that rule, and then we will go through the rulemaking process to get that done.
But thank you, Mr. Chairman. And maybe, John, you can speak on this just a little bit, but just actually the criteria for determining what a recordable incident is a huge impact on small businesses, particularly the smaller the business, the more impact it has on being able to enter to master service agreements. And, you know, so if, John, maybe you can give us a little more enlightenment.
Certainly. Ms. Chairman, Representative Larson, so our deputy administrator for Wyoming OSHA, Dan Bulkley, is on the national committee, and that is one of their priorities. I can tell you that he is very frustrated, as are we, that at the national level, things are stalled. It's a federal OSHA rule that would need to change. We do encourage folks, as they're doing those master service agreements, to look at things other than that, such as the EMRs, which can really, really help. And Ms. Chairman, if I might go back to Representative Larson's comment about the delinquent debt and just really emphasize many of the agency efforts to enhance collection of debt. So we've now engaged the use of a collection agency through those two attorney general positions. They now help us get the judgments, which we're then able to use. That was part of the issue before, was getting the judgment to then proceed with good and valid collection activities. Those four positions that you referenced, they don't do the collection of debt, but they identify that, hey, here is someone that owes the division, and then those collection efforts then get their arms around that. So it's a matter of semantics. So they don't do it themselves. The other avenues of the agency then will absolutely follow up on that to collect that debt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. John, I'm on page 108. Still in worker safety and compensation. Okay. So code 0292 shows a tremendous increase and maintenance contracts external between the base budget and the standard budget. What's the reason for that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, those are contracts which we utilize to maintenance and support largely for our PowerSuite claims management system. With our move to upgrade the PowerSuite, which is in our exception request, a lot of those should go by the wayside because we will be less dependent on outside contractors to maintain and support that system.
Mr. Chairman, so, Jason, you said will go by the wayside?
Some of them. Yeah.
How much of them, dollar-wise? Because, this is close to it's better than double.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I don't have an exact figure for you, but I can tell you within the 600-900 report that you have, there is a contract in there for what we call a DBA administrator, database administrator. And with the move to this new system, that contract, which I believe is about $200,000, would go away.
How much again?
I believe it's about $200,000 without looking at it, $190,000 maybe.
Okay, so that will still go up to, just round, doing some rounding here, $4.2 million. They've increased the maintenance contracts that much, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yeah, I mean, it is one thing that we struggle with maintaining that system and all its ancillary systems is some of the outside support that we're reliant on just through the vendor.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, so how old is that system?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that system that we currently use was implemented in 2012.
Thank
Mr. Chairman, if you look at the 900 series, you'll note a similar decrease. So the agency netted to zero from 900 and brought that up to that 0292. Yes. So it's a wash. It's just a net to zero.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. Okay.
Okay. Are we done with the exception request?
No. We have to DDS.
Okay.
That's it. And then we'll be done.
Okay, but we're done with the exception request
for
workers' comp?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, if...
5 minutes, almost up.
Yes.
This will go quick.
If you would direct your attention to page 113, or I'm sorry, 112, for our Disability Determination Services Unit. This unit processes and determines claims for Social Security disability insurance under the Social Security Act. I'd like to just very briefly mention that our manager of that unit, Jeff Graham, recently recognized by the Federal Social Security Administration for his long-time outstanding performance. He just runs a great, great operation over there. There are three exception requests for this unit, which begin on page 113.
I will direct your attention to page 113. This, Mr. Chairman, is that exception request number one for the position alignment. This was moving all those positions out of vocational rehabilitation into this unit to establish this unit as a new unit. The governor has recommended approval of this exception request. If you turn your attention to page 114, Mr. Chairman, we have exception request number two. This relates to setting up this unit as a new unit. This is moving all the associated expenditures for this unit from vocational rehabilitation into this new unit.
Please.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to reiterate once again that it's really hard to track this if you don't say what's general fund and what's federal fund or what's special fund. So just in the future, it'd be nice if that was done a different way.
Absolutely. And I will note that in the positions, there's one that's generally funded, the rest are, or one that's generally funded, the rest are federally funded in that first exception request. In the second exception request, those are all federal dollars for the expenditures. There was a typo on the actual page there. So, but we, yes, duly noted. I will make sure those are addressed in the future.
Okay.
And, Mr. Chairman, those general funds are recovered 100% through the indirect allocation.
If there are no other questions, the last exception request, Mr. Chairman, is on page 116. It's number 10. This is to asking for $161,558 for our case expert software. This has been approved by ETS, and the governor does recommend approval of this exception request.
Questions? All right.
Mr. Chairman, no further questions. That concludes our budget presentation.
Any further questions? Bingo, done. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll take a short break, and then we'll see how quickly we can wrap up the rest of the day.
.0369, working draft
0.3. Well, we got about, no. Is it a thing? All right. I got it. Wait. There's no staple.
Make up your mind, Nicholas.
All right. There's no single bill. There it is.
Yes.
Well, it's almost 1 o'clock. Glad you guys showed up here on time.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Enjoyed the view from the rear, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman and Chairman Burns, committee members, we've looked over your draft bill, and bluntly, we like it. I mean, it's pretty simple. The only thing that we do ask that is that we make it effective July 1st so that we have time to go through all of our files and find out who's going to need more employment verification, because some of them only proved a year or two, and they may have 10 years. So if you give us till July 1st, we can go through all of our records, which we've already started doing, go through all of our records and make sure we can send letters out to maybe some of those minors that might need to prove longer employment history.
Sure.
I did run some numbers right before I came. We have just under 9,000 members registered. And in 2012, when we tried to run and change it to a five-year employment history before they could receive benefits, we started tracking minors that we knew had proven employment of 5 years and greater, and then those that were less than 5 years. And really the vast majority, about 6,300 to 6,400 of the minors that we have registered, have over 5 years' experience. And I'm thinking of those 5 years' experience, I'd have to say about 75% of those are going to stay in the program. They probably have more than the 10 years.
Mr. Chairman, Don Stauffenberg, to add to that, most of the people that will stay in the system at 10 years are those retired uranium miners, the miners from Horse Creek, the miners from CFNI at Guernsey Sunrise. And those miners that could have accumulated what we call accumulated abuse over the years. And I would add, too, that we have our staff looking at it, but our staff is a three.
Okay. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, question. Not quite hypothetical, but I know you probably don't have the numbers. Are there minors right now with, let's say, 8 or 9 years' experience that are your members that are getting services who this would then turn around and say, you're done?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, yes. The numbers, I don't know.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a given. There again, 1 year, they're eligible again. I mean, that's not a good answer,
right.
but in 1 more year, they would be eligible again. I don't know a good answer to that.
All right. Thank you.
Further questions? All right. Any other comments, changes? 10 years, you're comfortable with. That's really the key.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'm very comfortable with 10 years. And honestly, I've talked to a lot of the minors that have come into the office. They're all worried about us going broke, as they put it, and then they wouldn't have any benefits. And the majority of them are well over 20 years' experience. Of course, those are the ones that are concerned about it because they have the age, they have the cumulative damage to their bodies. They want that money available for them when they need it.
All right. Further discussion. All right. At this point, do we want to sustain a motion to have to carry this bill and move it forward as a committee bill? Been moved by Senator Land. We have a second by Representative Walters. Further discussion. Any public comment on this? Seeing none, we'll close public comment. No further discussion. Why don't we take a roll call? Oh, yeah. Would someone want to move this bill? I think we kind of got ahead of myself. Then moved, seconded. Now, any further discussion on amendments to the bill? Senator Lynn. Been moved and seconded by Representative Walters. Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. Now, further discussion on the bill. Question, question being called. Don, could you do a roll call, please?
Mr. Chairman, the question is on 18 LSO 0369, Working Draft 3. Representative Burkhardt.
Aye.
Representative Larson.
Aye.
Representative Schwartz.
Aye.
Representative Summers.
Aye.
Representative Walters.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Senator Dockstetter.
Aye.
Senator Driscoll.
Aye.
Senator Hastert.
Aye.
Senator Landon.
Aye.
Co-Chairman Burns.
Excuse.
Chairman Nicholas.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, the bill passes House bill or Senate file?
Oh, let's give it to the Senate. We'll have a few on this side, so.
We might be able to get it over to your side.
So I apologize we didn't, you know, it didn't take very long. We probably could have whipped this out at 1 o'clock, and time flies.
Mr. Chairman, we were here for the count, so we're done. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, why don't we just, since we've got some court members here, let's go to the First Judicial District bill, which is House Bill 0385. Let me find it. So just real quickly, committee members, I brought this up to the committee, and the reason I brought this up, my knee hurts just looking at it.
Now see what this job has done.
In hopes that the committee would entertain adopting this bill as a committee bill, and as we discussed prior, and we had the court members here before, this has been kind of in the on the doorstep for 3 or 4 or 5 years, even, I think, and originally was originated by Senator Tony Ross, that creating the location in the court space for this position. It's the busiest docket in the state for the district court judges, and they have had, because of various issues that we discussed before, some fairly significant issues with the access to one of the judges because of family issues, and it's been kind of a trying time for them. And what they've discovered is that it's not only time, but it's beyond time for this to happen. And so, with no further ado, I will turn it over to Judge Sharp to just kind of give us a rundown and an update and kind of re-explain why we're here and what the purpose of this is. So go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for giving us an audience today. You were kind enough to listen to us a couple weeks ago when the judiciary.
It's on. He's just got it.
It's on. Leave
him alone. Yeah.
Leave him
alone. It never ends.
Right? Right?
Mr. Chairman, that's the loveliest shade of red I've
Yeah. And so, for those of you who don't know, this is Judge Sharp, who happens to be my brother-in-law, and Judge Rogers. So, please proceed.
Thank you. When we were here last time, I think we kind of outlined for you a little bit the history that we've had in the First Judicial District in terms of the weighted judicial weight load studies that the Supreme Court has done. And for a number of years, as Chairman Nicholas indicated, we have been running very high numbers. In fact, the last poll or the last survey that the Supreme Court did showed that we should have 4.5 judges in our district. Right now we have 3. The end result of that has been, of course, backlogs. It has been difficult for lawyers and litigants to get time on our docket to have divorces and the whole myriad of cases that we hear in our district brought to a timely resolution. Senator Ross was kind enough 2 years ago to run a bill, and the problem I think that the legislature was concerned of is the situation they had in Casper, where The legislature did not want to appropriate funding for a new judge without knowing that there was going to be an adequate court space and space for court staff. Senator Ross ran that bill, and it did pass, which was very productive, and it helped a lot with our project. The county commissioners then went through the six-penny route to get the funding for our courthouse, and fortunately that passed. So the municipal court has now vacated the second floor, which is where the new courtroom is going to go, and the project is set to start construction in March. What we're here for today is to give our pitch to you, I guess, as to why we would like to see the project, or at least the funding for the new judge and staff, expedited to the extent that it can be, so that the formal creation of the fourth judgeship would happen this July, and so that then from there we can get on track to hopefully get the Supreme Court to open up that vacancy and to fill that spot, so that we can be ready to add the fourth judge and deal with the backlog that we have right now. As I said, we kind of went through it quickly last time we were here, and but I'd certainly be glad to answer any questions, and Judge Catherine Rogers, who's with me, to answer any questions that all of you might have.
Mr. Kocher.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a question. I have to express some grudging admiration for the legislators who are also attorneys from Laramie County, because you pretty much roped us in on this thing, you and Tony Ross. You got the legislature a year or two ago to promise that if they provided the facility, we'd provide the judge. And now they've provided the facility. I don't think we have a choice but to vote for this.
And thank you, Mr. Kocher. But in response to that, this wasn't the first time 2 years ago that they asked for this position. And I have to honestly say that I fought doing this about 4 years ago, just because judge inflation happens like all other inflation. The fact is that sometimes we just got to knuckle down and work harder. But in practicing in front of this court, it's clearly the busiest. It's hard to get court settings, and we're not doing justice to justice by the current process that we got. So, further comments. So these guys were mad at me until 2 years ago or two.
No Christmas presents for you.
Yeah. Judge Rogers, you hobbled in here. Yeah. Please.
Happy to be silent.
Yeah. And we've got the Chief Justice here that's here as well. And Lily, you can't talk. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have anything to add. Just totally supportive of the district judges in our first judicial district, and they need the help. They've needed help for a long time, and it takes a toll.
Okay. Any further questions for the court? Representative Sondland.
Mr. Chairman, as someone who has a sister, I'm impressed that you were able to get away with what you just said.
All right.
He got away with it for now.
So, seeing none, we'll close public discussion on this. And do we have a motion on the bill?
Well, I think you might want to ask if there's any other public.
Is there any other public comment? I thought we'd do that once we move the bill forward.
You know, seeing that there's judges here, we might want to go through procedure correctly.
True. Yeah. I've never been good at that anyway.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just skimming through, but is there a fiscal note with this? Are we just authorizing the judge? I'm sorry, I didn't.
Section 3, page 3.
Appropriation.
Section 3.
Thank you. I couldn't find it.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Co-Chair.
If seeing no other public discussion, I move the bill.
Bill's moved and seconded. For any further discussion? Please.
Mr. Chairman, just an explanation of where the money's coming from and what's the expectation of where it'll come from in the future. So
the answer is the money comes from the general fund, just like all judicial positions, and it goes into the judicial budget. So it'll be an additor at the end of the day for the It's roughly $1.1, $1.2 million per judge, I believe.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sommer.
Right now it comes out of the LSRA, but in the future it will?
Yeah, it will go on to the regular budget.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman. Given the hard times that the state has, this, I could see deficit hawks maybe wanting to argue against something like this as an expansion government. But when you look at the expansion of the document and the explosion of crime here in this portion of the state, for various reasons, I think it's more than justified.
Yeah. Well, we have a fundamental obligation to do it. That's the end of the day. So. So the bill's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is coming from the LSRA, I see. How would you feel about changing that to come from the general fund, and then at the end of our budget cycle, we're going to zero that out using the LSRA, and rather than having multiple draws on the LSRA, just have a more or less a single one at the end of the cycle?
Mr. Chairman, it was written to come from the LSRA because at the time that was the only available funds. I think Representative Walters is exactly correct that at the end of round robin and markup, you will do all of the budget balancers and you could incorporate this or other bills. For example, if you follow the governor's recommendations, he leaves $24 million on the table in general funds. I know there are a lot of changes that could be possible, but it is likely that you can address this in the general fund if you so desire.
We have a second on that motion.
Is it a motion?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I would.
Second.
I think it's the right thing. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion on the bill?
Question
being called. All those in favor that this will be a JAC bill?
I think it's a roll call.
Yeah, as modified. Roll call, please.
Mr. Chairman, you're voting on 18-LSO-0385, working draft number 6. Representative Burkhardt.
Aye.
Representative Larson.
Aye.
Representative Schwartz.
Aye.
Representative Summers.
Aye.
Representative Walters.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Senator Dockstetter.
Aye.
Senator Driscoll.
Aye.
Senator Hastert.
Aye.
Senator Landon.
Aye.
Senator Burns.
Aye.
Chairman Nicholas.
Aye. Thank you very much. Thanks for hobbling in, Judge Brazos.
Thank you very much.
I think it's a budgeting concern. It has to be our side.
No, it's a separate bill.
Mr. Chairman, would you like this a Senate file or a House bill?
We'll take it.
Well, Senate will take it, they say.
We'll take it.
Yeah.
That's a pretty fancy rig.
I assure you it has lost its luster.
That thing's been the lucky one.
All right. The next and last item of order of the day, I believe, is the Supplemental Security Income Program. And, Don, would you remind us what this is and what we've got in front of us?
Mr. Chairman, 18-LSO-0380, working draft 0.5, comes at the request of the Department of Health and Department of Family Services in their budget requests. They are transferring the budget authority from the Department of Family Services to the Department of Health for the establishment of the State Supplemental Security Income Program. This legislation transfers those duties from DFS to Department of Health.
Representative Larson.
Thank you. And Don, I have it in my head that was administered through health care financing and then took a back seat and come back through the Department of Family Services some funky way. Is that – no? I see some good doing this. How was that working before,
Mr. Chairman? Eric McVicker, Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Health, and Representative Larson.
If you may remember, we have an exception request out there to transfer the budget for SSI payments from DFS to health. Health has been administering this program, I think, back in 2013 to 15 is when we took it over. And we're making the payments, we're making the eligibility determinations, we're doing the work. It's just the appropriation was remaining in DFS. So the requirement or the request in the exception request was a net to zero, the money coming from DFS and going to health, so there isn't really an impact. This bill just requires some statutory language cleanup around that, I believe.
So in essence, this is really kind of a cleanup bill, just to, do exactly what's already been
done. Mr. Chairman, you're correct.
All right. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to make sure I'm remembering the right one, though, was this the program where you were not actually collecting all that you were supposed to because DFS didn't have sufficient funds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, that is correct. The net to zero was for the appropriation, and we have an additional $490,000 that we are asking in addition because we are spending more than what the appropriation is.
And do we have the exact number on that of what is owed? I think it's a $10 million ask, roughly.
Mr. Chairman, the amount is $1,702,810 is the appropriation that we're asking to move. Then on top of that, there's a second exception request for $490,000. We're spending roughly $2.1 million a biennium on this program.
Any further discussion? Anybody? Representative Larson?
Federal funds, Social Security, federal funds or general funds?
Mr. Chairman, this is general funds.
Okay, thank you.
Questions about this? So that we need to make sure that we got it explained well. I mean, you'll probably do it on our side, Lloyd, but we'll work with whoever gets over on that side. Further discussion? So this was a request they made to us during the interim, so we've seen this before.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, move the bill.
I second it.
Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing then, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, no.
What was the vote on?
Just to discuss the bill. Any further discussion on the bill? Any amendments to the bill? Any public comment on the bill?
Question
being called on whether or not we will sponsor this bill. And with roll call vote, Don?
Mr. Chairman, the vote is on 18 LSO 0380, working draft 0.5. Representative Burkhart?
Aye.
Representative Larson?
Aye.
Representative Schwartz?
Aye.
Representative Summers?
Aye.
Representative Walters?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Senator Dockstetter?
Aye.
Senator Driscoll?
Aye.
Senator Hastert?
Aye.
Senator Landon?
Aye.
Co-Chairman Burns?
Aye.
Chairman Nicholas?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, the bill passes Senate file or House bill?
Sounds like a great House bill to me.
All right. It'll be a House bill. All right. Any other business for the day?
Mr. Chairman, do we have any other bills? Do we have any other bills we can work on? Get knocked out?
Yeah. Well, let's take a minute and let's browse our stack, and we'll just take a few seconds here.
Investments Task Force.
Mr. Chairman, in most instances, LSO has made an attempt to reach out to the agencies that are affected by the bill drafts.
Notice.
Yes, that's correct. And so they've been, all the other bill drafts have been placed on the agenda falling on a certain day and a certain time. This is Tamara Revely, LSO staff attorney. So if you do consider them now, the public doesn't have any notice.
Okay. So I guess we're going to be done early for the day. Imagine that.
But some of them wouldn't mind if we passed them with or without their testimony anyway.
Well, it gives me a chance to go play with it a little bit tonight. Anything else, Don? You want to catch us up tomorrow?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, you have three agencies tomorrow morning, the Office of State Lands and Investments, followed by Public Defender, and wrapping up the morning with the Oil and Gas Commission. Geologic Survey will be the first up in the afternoon, and then you have four bills, all of which relate to the retirement system, and they are scheduled to be present for those bills.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, you have one agency.
45 degrees, high of 30, you know, low of 30.
Callbacks.
Yes, and five callbacks. It's hard to anticipate how long you will question various agencies, but it is possible that tomorrow.
Does the Senate want to bring any duct tape?
Now, tomorrow could be a lot like today, depending on the speed. So if you want a couple of those callbacks on deck, please advise us, and that would make Friday shorter. If not, that's fine as well.
Let me walk us through Friday then. Who's up and
Department of Transportation? Technically, they are identical to the Game and Fish now, where they have no general funds, but they do have a lengthy other funds budget request.
And I think he wants to explain a few things. He's going to go through. I think there's a separate bill, and also he's. And part of the endow for the airports. And my guess is he'll want 20 or 30 minutes at least on that.
Our expectation was at least 3 hours total with the Department of Transportation, and then a half an hour each for five agencies on callback would still put you out of here somewhere around 2:30.
Is there an interest of working through lunch on Friday? We could kind of let that be known, and so that for those folks to be here, so they if they start showing up around any time after 11, in case we get through YDOT quickly, that might make sense. There you go.
Well, that'll speed things up.
All right, feels like the weekend already. All right, we're adjourned. We'll see everybody tomorrow morning.
So we're here till.